What's going on, fellas? What's going on?
Morning, gang.
Good morning, good morning.
What's up? Good morning, you wankers.
Austin, you got your gain turned up, bro? You got your gains up?
Yeah, I was going to say, is my gain good?
Yeah.
I think it's been lacking, mate.
Yeah, we need to get your gains up. Anyways, how you guys doing today? This beautiful Wednesday morning, late morning.
Is it still snowing with you guys down there?
No,
that was like a one time thing. That was fucking weird, honestly.
That was crazy, mate.
Yeah, it was like one or two days it was snowing. And it's honestly, there's still some snow, like little drizzles right now. It's pretty cold still here, but yeah, that's just how weather is around here, though. It's super bipolar.
Mm-hmm. That's yeah. Crazy, did you get any snow up there in Vancouver, BC?
No, not at all. It's been actually really nice for the most part up here. So sorry about that.
It's 41 degrees right now.
Yeah, it is a little crispy outside.
Yeah.
41 degrees.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what that is.
He's a fucking American.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, dude. Them freedom units, dude.
I had a new client who started with me. She's from the UK, and she sent me her weight at 12 stones and 2 pounds. And I was like, hey, you're going to have to convert this for me.
That's hilarious.
And she started like logging, and she's like, oh, yeah, sorry. And then she put it in, and I was like, okay, because I put it into Google and like it made sense, but I was like, yeah, I'm gonna have to put that into Google every single time to calculate her weight in pounds. It's just, yeah, anyways, I hadn't had that in a while. I've had some Canadian clients, and they don't, because Canada, they don't, you guys use pounds, right?
Yeah, mostly.
It was weird. I was like, wait, I've had clients who use the metric system and they've never sent me stones, though.
I know. It's so funny. When I first came to Canada, I started to realize how weird British stuff is. And like, people would be like, you guys weigh yourself in like stones. And so you're like, one stone is about this heavy. And it's like, well, I guess that probably is how it came around. Like, your average stone weighs about 14 pounds.
Right.
Right? So, like, that's how many pounds are in a stone, which is funny. So, 14 stone in a pound. And even, like, my dad will be like, yeah, back when I was 12 and 3/4 stone. I'm like, Dad. And I'm like, Dad, like, even like people that talk in stones and pounds have got no idea what you're talking about, mate.
Okay, good. So it's not just me. You guys have no idea what the hell you're talking about either. So, okay, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, when I first said, I'm like, wait, people actually use stones like to measure them?
I mean, kilos would make more sense. Like, kilos, I could be like, okay, that makes more sense to me. Because that's like, yeah. Anyways, what are you guys up to today? How's your week going?
Good. I had my, like, annual checkup, like, I guess, this morning.
And, oh, nice.
Yeah. Everything's good.
Did you get the old thumb in the...
Yeah. No, I did not. Oh. But I did have to stick my finger in their, like, whatever they use to measure, like, blood oxygen or whatever. But yeah, no finger up any cavities if that's what you're trying to get at.
Okay, I wasn't sure. My doctor does that. I thought it was weird.
My doctor does it once a week. I thought it was standard.
I thought it was just standard. Anyways, I'll talk to him about that.
But I mean, one thing that I guess I'm always stoked to like hear about is like blood pressure. So clocked in at 112/78, I think. So yeah.
Whoa. Super good blood pressure, dude.
Yeah. All the cardio's paying off.
Yeah, you get your steps in a lot. I've noticed with blood pressure, because I have a blood pressure cuff at home. It fluctuates so much. Like, literally fluctuates insanely for me every single day. I went to the dentist and it was like 150 over like 90. And I was like, I just measured it at home and it was like 125 over 70 something. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, yeah, it was weird. Like it jumps around so much. Andy looks like he's lost in space right now.
my charger is not working. So if I disappear for a few minutes, that's why, because I've gone to go and get another charger. But no, it's all good. But I actually went to the doctor as well at one point to have and they took my blood pressure and she was like, you're right, because it's a little high at the moment. And then she took it again. Then she took it again and it was fine. But like, I think sometimes as well, like when you're in that setting of, you know, you're in the doctor's office and it's a little bit more stressful and you're like, well, I hope it's all right. And like, sometimes even that kind of thing can elevate your blood pressure or, you know, your heart rate, for example. And so if you're feeling stressed, that can have an effect, I think, in the moment on certain things.
Yeah.
I have a blood pressure monitor. And actually what I found with mine is, so there's the two numbers. There's the systolic, which is the top number, mm-hmm. which I believe is the pressure when your heart is pumping. And the diastolic is when your heart is not pumping. So it's like boom, boom. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when your heart beats, that's systolic. And then when it's, I guess when it's contracted, that's systolic. And when it's relaxed, that's diastolic.
Uh-huh.
And so the top number is when it beats, when it contracts. And then the bottom number is when it relaxes. Okay. So the top number indicates, I'm pretty sure this is right. The top number indicates your blood pressure at the point when it contracts. And the lower number indicates your blood pressure when it's relaxed. And they're the two differences. So I have, whenever I have mine taken, I'm like around 130 over 60 usually. Mm-hmm. So I have a relatively high systolic and a relatively low diastolic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what that means. I don't say like, don't worry about it, but like, I would obviously like it to be like, what is it? 120 over 70 or something would be like,
yeah, I think that's the standard that they
yeah. say. That's, yeah. I mean, and the thing is like, it's always fluctuating. So even if you're like pre-hypertensive one day or you're like hypertensive one day, it's like the next day you might be good. So it's hard to know. And I like to just take an average and just be like, okay, what is it generally on these days? And, you know, just kind of look at it more frequently. Jordan Syed actually did a podcast about how he got his blood pressure down, and I didn't listen to it yet. I'm gonna go listen to it when I'm getting my steps in later, but I'd love to learn about how you can use like zone 2 cardio and different cardio ranges to get your blood pressure down, because I know that that's how you do it, like cardiovascular health and getting in good cardio, like in the right ranges and in the correct amounts of volume. That's how you get your blood pressure down. And having good blood pressure is so fucking important. Like, it literally is a good indicator of your overall general health of your heart. So yeah, anyways, get your cardio in, people.
Just goes to show that there is way more to focus on with your journey than just like what you look like. I know that our podcast is like named the Roundtable of Body Recomposition. And that's like one of our primary goals is like, we like to look good. Of course we do. You know, it's a big driver of why a lot of people train, but come to the day to day, there's other things to focus on outside of those goals of just looking a certain way. So there's other things that are more health based that people should also be prioritizing, because like when you get to like, I don't know, 60 or 70, are you going to care that much about what you look like within reason? Like mm-hmm. when you were like 40 or something, you know, like, so anyway, maybe you will, but like there's other things to focus on, like blood pressure, resting heart rate, cardiovascular health, you know? So people might think, oh, I don't need to do cardio. And I've definitely fallen for this trap before because I do like the extremes. I definitely go all in on certain things. When I hired my first coach to do my like my proper cut back in like 2019, I did barely any cardio. I was moving a lot because I was coaching a lot of classes at the time. But like I did barely any cardio and I wore that at the time like a bit of a badge of honor. And then when I first started coaching my coaching business, I would almost be like, yeah, you don't need to do any cardio. You know, and now coming back full circle, now I've been doing this for a few years, I'm just like, wow, like cardiovascular work is so important for overall health. And of course, like it has health, it has benefits on like body composition and just energy balance and stuff. But like in terms of health, like doing those things, like reducing your blood pressure, reducing your resting heart rate, improving mm-hmm. your cardiovascular function, those things should not be overlooked in your health and fitness journey. Yeah.
And it doesn't actually impact like your lean muscle tissue as much as I think most people like to exaggerate that fact. Like if you are hammering in like HIIT cardio and tons of like vigorous, intense cardio, like multiple days per week, like, yeah, sure. You know, that may impact your lean muscle tissue, may impact your recovery from your resistance training, but zone two cardio is the easiest to recover from outside of walking. Probably zone one is probably the easiest to recover from, but zone two is very easy to recover from. You can get a ton of volume in doing zone two cardio, and it's not really going to impact your lean mass, and it's not going to impact your recovery from your lifting. So I think that we as coaches need to kind of change this narrative that has been like anti-cardio, because that's so fucking 2012. You know, like that's so old school fitness bodybuilder bullshit. And we kind of need to focus less on, you know, aesthetics. And even though we all have aesthetic goals, like doing zone two cardio and getting in that cardio is going to help you aesthetically as well. So, yeah, I think it's important that we kind of change that narrative as coaches who are trying to be not just looking at aesthetics. We want our clients to be healthy. We want them to live a long time, and we want people who follow us to also be healthy and live a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, I think it's one of those fallacies that like we don't really realize until we like actually get older. And I don't think this is something that will ever go away anytime soon. It's like we've all been young at one point, and we all thought we're invincible and we're going to live forever. Until you actually start to age, and you start getting, you know, closer to the end of your life, and then you're like, oh shit, like I better take care of my health, I better make sure that I live as long as possible with the highest quality of life. And like, and I think like high, like our blood pressure itself is like one of the like biggest indicators of like longevity and like overall health too. And like that's why so many people struggle with it nowadays.
Yeah, and I think also like you guys mentioned, like getting blood work done, you know, like I think that's so important to get a full panel done, you know, at least once per year. And most people don't get their blood work done. They don't notice stuff before it comes up, and a lot of there'll be a lot of stuff like out of range or out of the optimal range. And even though, you know, we're not really worried about like getting our getting everything in like the most optimal range as possible, because that's just a lot of shit to think about. When stuff is out of the optimal range and it's starting to creep up, like your cholesterol is starting to creep up out of the optimal range, maybe you have a low HDL, which is a good cholesterol, and you have a high LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, like starting to think about that stuff and starting to prioritize like ways to get your cholesterol down, ways to improve your cholesterol. And, starting to think about this stuff long term, you know, if you have, you know, as a male, if you have low testosterone levels, like looking at ways to improve that naturally, you know, getting more high quality sleep, making sure that you're training and make sure that you are, you know, resting and recovering, make sure that you're eating foods that allow you to kind of optimize that as well. So all of these things are going to impact you long term, and it's important to get your blood test done to make sure that you guys are looking at that stuff. So yeah, I highly recommend getting your tested at least once per year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's and like also that is something that's like just so like we know that we all understand it is something that's super difficult. And I think all of us, we've all listened to the recent podcast by Jordan and Mike, where like honestly we all suck at like taking preventative care, mm-hmm. or like whether that's like fitness, whether that's health, whether that's like, you know, whatever it is in our life, we always like, it's much easier to focus on like, what is the short term gain that I'm going to get rather than like the long term thing. It's hard to be like, look at these things and do it long term in terms of like, you know, how can I put the methods into place so that I can sustain this weight loss for the long term, or whether that's like, what can I do for my health right now that's going to lead to the long-term consequences of like me having good health, say 30 years from now, rather than like, oh shit, by the time like 30 years comes and then you're like, oh shit, there are these problems that come up that I could have dealt with. And yeah, we just kind of struggle with seeing things in the long term versus the short term.
Yeah, and the US is really bad at this. Like, our healthcare system is pretty much, you know, tertiary care. Like, we don't really have these systems put into place with our healthcare system to look at preventative care. So it's kind of fucked. Like, we literally only treat the symptoms. We don't treat the root causes. And it's tough because you need a lot of money in order to treat the root causes of a lot of these things. So it's like, there's a barrier to entry to treat these things, but we do what we can as far as like lifestyle and as far as the things that we can control, like our training and nutrition and getting good sleep, managing stress. Like, all of these things are kind of the best preventative medicine that you can take, is, you know, making sure that you optimize your day-to-day habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually a good point you bring that up. Like, I think I've heard that the financial burden of like doing the preventative care is like so much cheaper than like actually taking care of the problem when it comes up. And like, yeah, it's just like financially everything, it works out to be better, but it's just that I think collectively as a society, we kind of suck at just looking at the long-term stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, we need a better healthcare system like Canada.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyways,
I do want to bring things back a little bit to the point that you made about how people think that, you know, doing more cardiovascular work is going to ruin their progress. And actually had a really great call with a new client that I'm starting with, and she was saying that she saw one of my posts that I made about me going in zone 2 cardio, and we were talking about her cardio. She does cardio 4 times a week. And she was saying, I was saying like, is it high intensity, low intensity? She would say, I think it's low intensity. And I said, so what's your heart rate? She was like about 170 beats per minute.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So, and like, I completely empathize with this person because like, I know what it's like to want to go hard, you know, and to like push yourself in the gym. And it is really difficult to take a step back from that. But like, you are 170 beats per minute. That's like zone 5. That's like the top zone. Like, that is, and she's obviously super, super fit to be able to sustain that heart rate for like 20 minutes, you know, and not feel as uncomfortable as someone else that's not as fit. Right. So, but here's the thing with that. As you increase the zone level and you increase the intensity of your cardiovascular work, that is going to be way more fatiguing on your system, which means that you are going to be way more fatigued going into your resistance training workouts. Mm. Therefore, you're not going to be able to put all your efforts into that because you're going to be running, even if you don't feel it, you're going to be operating at way less capacity than you would be if you were managing that stress and fatigue better by, you know, going in and doing less intense cardiovascular work. It's like trying to max out every single day, all the time, on every movement, every day, forever, you know, for like 3 or 4 sets. It's like you're never going to always see progression after a while, you know. And it's the same thing because your body's just going to be operating at like 70% of what it's capable of because it's just too much. And that's the thing. It's like, if you're always trying to train in zone 5, whether it feels like super hard on your system or not, but it's so fatiguing that you're not going to be able to give it your all in the gym for your resistance training. So that's where it's like, it's going to be a hard mindset to take a step back from always pushing yourself. And this is kind of where I've struggled, because I used to be a runner. I would have said at one point that I was a runner. Like, I was no elite runner, but I would be able to run 5K in around 20 minutes, like 20 minutes 30, I think, was like my fastest 5K back in the day, like 9 years ago. And now I'm running at like 8.5 minutes per kilometer, which I don't even know what that is in miles. I don't dread to think, but like, I am running so slowly. And for me, and I'll tell you guys in a second how I've calculated my zone two, but I'm running at between 114 to 133 beats per minute is where I have to keep my heart rate in. And it's a very, very light jog. And when like I go to the running track and there's a lot of people there, people walking, people jogging, and I have to really swallow my pride and, like, you know, drop their ego, because like people are coming past me and I'm just like, I shouldn't be letting these people come past me, you know, because of the competitive aspect. It's like, mm-hmm. I should be fucking giving it some, son. Come in, take this, coming through, mate. You know what I mean? And but then I just reel it in and be like, oh, they're in zone three, wasting time, mate.
They're wasting all their time.
If only they knew.
they're in the bloody gray zone, mate. This is in green. So
you know what I'm picturing right now is those power walkers who wear those like crazy suits. Those like have you guys seen that? The like aerodynamic power walking suits.
Yeah.
I'm picturing you in one of those, just
just giving it some.
Yeah.
But it's crazy because like I have to go so slowly. It's embarrassingly slow to stay in that heart rate zone. But that's also because I've just started back running. Yeah. So I have to build that base. And as I do more of it, I'll be able to run faster and stay within that zone. And the way that I've calculated that is pretty simple, really. I mean, you take you find your max heart rate, which the most easiest way of doing that, that's the least accurate, but a very easy way, is 220 minus your age will give you your maximum heart rate, which for me is about 186 beats per minute, although I clocked that I got 190 when I did a run the other day. And then you take 60 to 70% of that, and that's your zone two, basically. So 50 to 60 would be zone one, 60 to 70 is zone two, 70 to 80 is zone three, I think, perhaps. But anyway, 60 to 70% is your zone two, and you kind of stay within that. And a lot of the times I'm walking, you know, and you don't have to be running. In fact, it's probably easier for you to manage that if you're on a stationary bike, if you're walking uphill on a treadmill. You don't have to be going out for a run. but like keeping that intensity down means that you're getting super amounts of like cardiovascular benefits. You're not fatiguing your body too much because it's only like one small level up from a walk, but you are getting that heart rate up higher for a consistent period of time. And so you're getting more health benefits, you're getting your steps in, and you're not fatiguing yourself too much that you can't still train hard. Right. I was also watching a YouTube video of Nick Bear. Do you know that guy? Mm-hmm. He's like a ex-bodybuilder. He does a lot of like ultra marathon running now. And he said that he started to lose the most amount of weight when he was doing a lot of interval work. That's what he said. He was like, he started to lose the most amount of weight when he was doing the most amount of high intensity interval
work. You're saying he was losing the most amount of lean mass, because this guy was probably already pretty lean.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're talking about muscle weight, right?
Yeah. Because he was like, I'm pretty sure like this guy's been on the roids. Let's say, I mean, I'm
on
known,
the roids. He's on the sauce.
On the roids. I mean, Andy Tate's no Natty or Not video extraordinaire, but like, I mean, you just got to look at some of these guys, and you're like, this guy's fucking huge, man. Come on, but
yeah, if somebody has veins on their cheekbones, they're probably on roids.
Yeah, so I'm sure he was on the soaps.
Sazu.
Yeah, so anyway, but anyway, so going back to what we were saying there, and what you'd kind of alluded to was like, you know, the more high intensity work you do, and not saying that high intensity work is bad, but the more you do, the more fatiguing it is. And if you're coupling that with resistance training, which in itself is very fatiguing, that is like training in zone five, pretty much, because yeah. you are getting your heart rate up super high. You're training your fast twitch muscle fibers, which are super fatiguing. They fatigue very quickly. And so trying to manage that, if you want to still be able to build muscle, if not maintain muscle, if you want to carry deficit or whatever, zone two is adding in like a few zone two sessions a week is not going to make or break your muscle gaining potential.
Yeah. And the recommended amount is only like 150 minutes per week. So it's not much. And, you know, you can do more than that. And I think the benefits do start to kind of dwindle out when you get like too high into those amounts of minutes per week. But you still get amazing benefits from doing it. And like the beauty of it is, it's relatively easy. It feels easy. Like zone two does not feel like a crazy struggle. Like you said, you're on the track and you have to humble yourself. It's like eventually your resting heart rate is going to improve. Your cardiovascular function is going to improve. And you will have to start jogging more and start running more in order to get into zone two. And cardiovascular endurance, like it starts to improve really fast. Like you start to get really fit really fast. And I wish I knew about this years ago, because I would be already very fit from a cardiovascular perspective now. Because like I remember going on hikes with people in the summertime. Like I'd go on hikes, and I'm not like a huge hiker, but I love like getting out on trails and like checking new adventure, like checking new places out. I love doing that. But it was almost embarrassing because I'd go with people who are super fit and I'd be like in the back just huffing and puffing up these hills. You know, it's humbling. But now I feel like I would do well on these hikes now because I've been incorporating so much zone two. So I think it is humbling at first, and then you start to improve your cardio very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, honestly, like the more I hear about that, like I don't know how like accurate that 150 minutes like recommendation is, or if like it does apply to like every single person, because I think when people hear that, it's like you can get into kind of like the all or nothing mindset, or like the hit or miss mindset, where like if you don't get 150 minutes, then like you don't reap all of these benefits. Because I still do remember like this kind of like that single moment in my life, and I think Andy can kind of relate, where like I was used to be like, oh, just lift, like, you know, cardio's for chumps and all that kind of stuff. And then there was one day it just like clicked in my head where like I need to do cardio and for like my overall health and everything. And I started off pretty easy, and I think after doing some research, I found this like really good article by Greg Knuckles over by Stronger by Science, and like he said basically like start with like 2 to 3 sessions of like 20 or 30 minutes each, and like don't add more until you like actually feel like you need it. And so I started slow. I added like I was lifting 3 times a week back then, and then I just added like 30 minutes of moderate intensity. I just did Stairmaster. I did it at the appropriate intensity where like I felt like it was challenging my heart rate and all that, and like I found significant improvements. And what is that, 3 times 30, that's 90, that's only like 90 minutes of moderate intensity cardio. And so it's like not near the 150 minutes of recommendations, but like I still saw like huge benefits. And for whatever it's worth, also like even if someone like who had that mindset of like, you know, like screw cardio, it's only you're only using it to burn calories for fat loss, and like when you're in that mindset, I knew I was in that mindset, and like I'm sure some people still do have that mindset, but like even all that stuff aside, if we only look at it like if you want to maximize like muscle building, or if you want to be like super efficient with your lifting, the biggest benefit that I found that cardio helped me was like literally my rest in between sets. Like what would usually take me like 3 to 4 minutes to like catch my breath in between hard sets, it like literally cut down to like 2 to 3 minutes. Like 2.5 minutes in, I felt like my breath caught up and like I was ready to go and hit that other next set hard. So like, I mean, that's the biggest benefits. And then kind of something that like I want to get into as well is like the energy systems. And like, I think this is kind of like why the you'll hear a lot of people say like, oh, don't do cardio because you're going to kill all your gains and all that. And I think it really goes back to like the energy systems. It's like the anaerobic versus the aerobic stuff. And so I don't want to go too much on a spiel with this, but like anaerobic basically means without oxygen, and then aerobic basically means like with oxygen. So like our body basically runs on these two like energy systems. Anaerobic without oxygen is basically for high intensity, short bursts of like activities that we need a lot of energy quickly, that quite frankly, we can't get a lot of oxygen in a short amount of time. If we want to get enough oxygen, we have to do activities for an extended period of time. And so aerobic activities, it's like more like, you know, lower or moderate intensity stuff that we can sustain, because obviously we can't sustain high intensity stuff forever. So that's why our body switches between these two energy systems. And from what I know, the science is that like, you can't maximize these two energy systems. So that's why people say like, oh, you can't like, that's why if you want to get like either super strong or super big, this uses mostly the anaerobic energy systems. And so this is why you can't do too much aerobic, because then the adaptation interference is too much. That's why you don't see like marathon runners who are super jacked, and you don't see bodybuilders or like powerlifters or people in that like category of anaerobic performance. You don't see them like being able to run like ultra marathons and all that. So it's just an interference effect. And but that's not to say that like you can't get the best of both worlds by like doing a little bit of both. And it's like for the average person, we're not trying to maximize or go all in. And as we like, as all of us have said, you can still like do both like to a pretty good level, but yeah, you just don't have to go super hard into these things.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think most of us just want to be all around like athletic. Most of us just want to look like we want to look like we lift, but we also want to be able to play a game of pickup basketball without totally being smoked, right? Mm-hmm. Or hang out with, you know, some little kids and like, you know, go play with our cousins or nephews or kids and like not be totally smoked afterwards. You know, it's like we don't want to be, because like to me, if I look super jacked, but I can't like play pickleball at a high intensity for an hour, like what's the point, right? I'd rather be able to be athletic and look a little bit, you know, less impressive. Because to me, like I don't know, I'm at an age where like looking super jacked is like, I almost think that I used to think that looking super jacked would get me more clients. I was like, I need to be that super jacked personal trainer because otherwise people won't take me seriously. And to a certain extent, yes, you are the billboard of your business. And you do need to look like you have your health under control, like you do lift and you do know what you're doing. You know how to get people results. But at the same time, looking like super jacked in like a bodybuilder, like to me, that becomes less and less important as I get further along in my career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then also the other thing, like to kind of like reiterate that point, is just like you don't have to maximize everything. And also like when you do both, like to a good degree, you can still reap the good benefits of both of them. Like even if your goal is to get maximally jacked, like you, like I said, like doing cardio, like literally benefits that when you have to take shorter rest times, when your cardiovascular health and when your cardiovascular performance is like, not optimized, but when it's like well-conditioned, it actually increases your lifting performance. If you can get your workouts done faster, if you can like condense that down, if you can improve your workout performance, then like it's like, you're literally like kind of like boosting both at the same time. You're not really taking one away from the other. Even those extremes, like I even have like read that like even like Olympic lifters, they like do a solid amount of cardio because they need to be well conditioned in that area. Yeah. And then I also did want to touch on the heart rate zones earlier. So the what's it called, that 220 minus age thing, like the more I read about it, like it's a good start for a lot of people, but I don't think that it's like accurate per se, just because there is a lot of variability within like different populations in terms of like max heart rate. And then also your heart rate zones do change at like as you get fitter, because like obviously as you get fitter, your heart starts to make adaptations, your heart gets more efficient. So like your heart rate zones actually move down. And also, yeah, as your heart rate gets more efficient, then it's able to pump more blood in like less strokes. And so Like, I think a better way is, I don't know if you guys have heard about this or if you use this, but I use this with clients, and I think this like really streamlines the process for them. I use something called the talk test.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, usually I'll say moderate intensity, or like, and I think this is well documented with the zone 3. And it was also brought up with in the podcast with Alex Viada and Jordan Syed. Like, when you know that you slip into zone 3 when you start to kind of lose control of your breathing. So I know zone 1 is obviously like a light stroll in the park. Zone 2 is kind of where like you can still control your breathing rate, but you kind of feel like you have to breathe a little bit deeper. Yeah. And then zone 3 is like kind of when like you start to lose control of your breathing a little bit, and then it starts to like you start to have to kind of like take deeper and deeper breaths, and you just kind of lose control. And then 4 or 5 is obviously just like more intense than that.
4 or 5, you're probably not going to be talking at all. Yeah. You're just like trying to manage. Like
panting.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I like that test as well. And I think I have kind of matched that up with the talk test and with my zone 2 as well. Like the 220 minus age right now for me is pretty accurate. But I do think as I get more cardiovascularly fit, you know, that will definitely change. And I may have to get into a more of a slight jog. Because what I usually do is an incline walk, or I play pickleball. And so I, you know, I just check my watch, and, you know, even like the way my watch tracks my heart rate, it's not super accurate. Like, I know it because sometimes I'll look down and I'll just be chilling and it'll say like 150, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, what's going on? Right. But like most of the time it's pretty solid. And what's cool about like some watches is you can like record your activity, and it'll tell you like which zone you're in based on your heart rate and stuff. And you can actually adjust your like your zones manually, which is pretty cool. So that's nice. So if you actually do want to get super nerdy and you want to get into like really, really dialing this shit in, like you can use the talk test to figure out your heart rate zones and then manually adjust that in your watch if you really want to get nerdy with it. But for me, I don't really care that much. I just want to get more – I want to get more athletic performance. I want to get a little bit more fit when I play, and when I play basketball, when I play pickleball, stuff like that. I just want to be able to hike without being out of breath, and you know, I just want to be fit. So for me, I just want to get in – pretty much as much zone 2 as my schedule allows. I don't really care about the 150 minutes. I go way over that. Some weeks I probably get like 6+ hours of zone 2, which is crazy. But I love playing pickleball, so I'm not bragging. Fuck you, Andy. I'm not bragging about that. I just like – I fucking love playing pickleball. I'm literally addicted to it. So I'm not like, yeah, I'm going to get my zone 2. Yeah. I'm not like that. I'm like literally like – I'm so fucking addicted to playing pickleball that I'm going to turn pro. I'm going to turn pro pretty soon. So mm-hmm. Look out for that, fucking Jeff Pacman on the fucking pro card, baby.
Dude, I'll be your fucking caddy, mate. I'll be wafting you down with a flannel, mate. You know what I mean?
They don't have caddies in pickleball.
Man. They will.
You can be my fucking ball boy.
Dude, you're going to be so famous. Pickleball is just going to be like trended around you, mate. If you have a caddy, there'll be caddies. And I'll be your caddy with a flannel.
Why would you be wearing a flannel?
No. I mean, a small towel to walk you down. I could be wearing a flannel as well, coming down from...
I'm picturing you with like a fucking bagpipe. I don't know why.
And a kilt.
Yeah. Yeah, a bagpipe and a kilt. And just fucking handing me towels.
Oh my God.
That's a deal, dude. If you want to do that, I'm down.
I'll do it, mate. Yeah,
mate. Well, I love it, man. I think this is such good information to be talking about, because it's like, dude, there's not a lot of people talking about this in the fitness industry, first of all. And then second of all, like, it's just nice that we are getting out of the whole stereotype or stigma about like, fuck cardio, cardio's for pussies, blah, blah, blah. It's like, such bullshit. Like, we all knew it was bullshit too, but we all kind of fell into that trap, I think. And I did as well. You know, I think we all did.
Mm-hmm. I've been on both ends.
Yeah.
I've been on both ends, literally. Like, I have been, when I was running, I was like, I did no weights really. And I was just like running so much better feet than weights at this point in time. It's like 10 years ago. And like, I would never knock anyone for doing weight training. But like, for sure, I was always just like, this is better for me than doing weights. And then at one point, like, I had to be my friend's personal training examination pretend client. So he was taking his personal training exam, and I had to be his pretend client. And I hadn't been doing any weight training. I'd just been doing a hell of a lot of running. And the first exercise he had me doing was like lunges. And like, I did one set of lunges, right? And my ass and quads were cramping after like one set. And like, I had a whole session left. And I was like, oh shit, I should probably start lifting some weights, because like, I am Fries and Minnelli over here, mate. You know what I mean? So like, anyway, I've gone from that extreme of like, you know, like lifting weights kills your gains, man, to cardio kills your gains, man. Like, I've gone from that extreme, transition through CrossFit into bodybuilding, and then been like no cardio, and now I'm like coming full circle around to like, we can just probably do a little bit of everything and it's going to make us all super healthy. And I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. Like, I've been working at a gym where it's like primarily Olympic weightlifting, and I see a lot of Olympic weightlifters, and they're incredible at their craft, but they don't do much cardio. Some do, but a lot don't. And I think that they would benefit a lot even in their own sport. They would benefit from having improved cardiovascular performance, not like anything ridiculous, but like just incorporating something there to, like you said, Austin, of being able to recover between sets. Because in Olympic weightlifting, if you have to go on and compete and you're stepping on the platform, if you follow yourself, which means that like there's no one lifting a weight between, like after you or between you, you have to follow yourself, which means you only get 2 minutes to go, basically. And so that means you only get that amount of time to like recover. And it's okay, it's only a one rep max, but like adrenaline, like there's all so much going through your system at that point in time when you're competing, that like, if you are in better shape overall, you're going to be able to handle that whole situation a lot better, and the whole training volume thing, of course. But yeah, and then runners can obviously benefit a hell of a lot from doing some kind of strength training. Because you see runners with issues all over. Like, I see people running around the running track, and I'm just like, oh, praise the Lord. Because like, I can see you're pretty much running on the inside of your calves. Mm. You know, like their feet aren't touching the floor. It's just the inside of their calves. Their feet are so pronated, you know, and it's like knees are coming in, and it's like, oh my goodness. You know, I can't even watch sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like the kind of unspoken thing is freaking Andy and his it's unfortunate we don't like upload video version of this podcast. That'd be hilarious. Maybe we will.
Maybe we will.
Yeah. But oh man, what was I gonna say? Oh yeah. It's spoken more about now, but like the benefits of like lifting for like joint health and all that stuff, because like with a progressive resistance training, you actually strengthen your joints, you strengthen your bones, tendons, ligaments, all that kind of stuff, along with the muscles. So it's like your joints are able to handle more. And like, you know, if you're running, like your body weight is your body weight. And like, unless you're like progressively like gaining more weight, your body's not really going to adapt from that. So like lifting weights does help a lot with that.
Yeah. And another thing too, like since I'm in the pickleball community here, it's mostly right now, it's like mostly a senior sport. So when I look around at who's playing pickleball, everyone has like knee wraps, and they have like, you know, elbow supports, and they're all wearing all these, like, basically they're all fucked up. They all have joint, they have joint replacements. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have joint replacements. A lot of them are like in pain. You can visibly see that they're in pain. And when I talk to them and I ask them like, what kind of like, are you doing any prehab exercises? Are you doing any strength training? And all of them are like, no, I don't, I just play pickleball. right? And it's like, that is bad. We don't want that, right? Because it's like, you need to get strong, especially in pickleball. There's a lot of lateral lunging going on. You need to be able to be strong and hold a like lateral position, basically a deep squat, and you're moving through all kinds of different movement patterns. And so you need to be strong through those movement patterns, and you need to be mobile through those movement patterns. And your joints, ligaments, and tendons need to get strong in those movement patterns, or else you are very prone for injury, especially in the knees. Like, the knees take a beating in pickleball because you're moving in so many different lateral and different movement patterns. So you need to be strong in those movement patterns. So I personally, I'm so grateful that I strength train and that I move through different planes of motion with my lower body exercises, because like, I am pretty strong in a lateral lunge. I am pretty strong at Bulgarian split squats. You know, I am pretty strong in those areas. And so my knees are pretty protected, and that feels good. And so I kind of want to teach that and preach that to people who are older, who are getting into this sport, because it's, a lot of them are just going to keep getting hurt if they don't learn to be more mobile and strong in those different positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this even reinforces the idea that, like, it's like, sure, it's cool to like optimize or be like super good at one specific field or one specific thing, but it's like, you're going to be so much better off if you try to be like well-rounded and have a good, you know, cardiovascular system, have a good base of like strength training and like good muscular base there. Like, you're going to benefit so much more just being well-rounded rather than just being super good at one specific thing.
Yeah.
I think that's where people like, they do wear things as a badge of honor, and they do like to identify with a certain group, and that certain group is the sport that they do, whether that's like they're a runner, they are a power lifter, and they, like I said, they wear that as a badge of honor, and they're like, no, I'm a power lifter, you know, I'm a little chubby and I get out of breath when I go upstairs. It's like, you should probably get in some bloody zone too, mate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're a little too out of breath, you know. So and then like the runner that's got like sore knees and whatnot, like, you know, you can do some lunges or something, probably that's going to help. And yeah, like coming from an overall health perspective, like, super important. It's not as sexy as like going all into one sport, but like, it'll benefit you for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a tough thing too, because like, there isn't a whole lot of information out there, like teaching people how to, like, different mobility exercises for a specific sport. Like, you probably shouldn't just start running. You know, you should probably do some form of like mobility or prehabbing, especially if you have issues with, you know, your former technique, or you have knee issues, or you're pronating, or you're everting, or whatever you're doing, like with your feet. You know, there's specific things that you can do to kind of like help with that. So it's tough because there's nobody like watching you and like telling you to do these things. So you just like, you're like, oh, we're just, humans are meant to run, so we should just hit the track and start running. And it's like, not necessarily, especially if you already have pre-existing issues. There's other things that you can do to make sure that you're setting yourself up for reducing your risk of injury.
Yeah. But then it's like, we don't want to create too much of a barrier to entry to do some kind of exercise. But then it's a tough one, because like people going out for a run, it's obviously going to improve their cardiovascular health. But if you're running with really bad technique to a point where like you're pounding the pavement a bit too much, and what I mean by that is like you're going out running too often and doing too many miles with bad technique, you are at risk of injuring yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And think about it like this, right? You know, if we have a client come to us and we're working in person or online, you know, we ask for form videos, we check their technique, and you know, of course, they're going to be lifting relatively heavy weights for a relatively low number of reps, like anything from like 5 to 12, I don't know. Well, I guess anything from like 3 to 20 reps, let's say. And all those reps, we want them to look very much the same, and we want them to be good technique. if you're going out for a run, you're doing like thousands and thousands of steps. And if you're not getting, like, if you're doing that with bad technique and you're doing that with unsafe technique and you're going out super often, it's only going to make those things worse. That's the worry. But then it's like, where do you, like, you don't want to create more of a barrier to entry for people doing exercise. That's the difficult mm-hmm. thing, I mm-hmm. suppose. It's a tough call, you know?
I think everyone should work with like a qualified PT. And then if you, at least for a little bit, and if you are actually having issues, like you're getting pain and like uncomfortable, you know, sensations while you're running or you're playing your sport or you're lifting, like go see a physical therapist. Like just go and go see a good physical therapist and you will find out pretty quick. Like ask questions too. Don't just have them prescribe exercises and then you not ask like what is the diagnosis or what is going on. Because a lot of PTs will assume that you don't want to know what your diagnosis is. You just want to fix it. And when you actually know what your diagnosis and what your issue is, then you can continue to do your own research on it, right? Because it's like the physical therapist is probably going to give you a list of 3 or 4 exercises to do with them and then at home. And then you're pretty much good to go. You don't need to see them for months and months and months. You just make sure you're keeping up on those exercises. But if you know the diagnosis, you can actually see if you're like getting better or not. Because it does take a long time to fix these issues. A lot of times it takes a very long time to fix these issues. Potentially sometimes years to fix these issues completely. And they will still come back if you stop doing those exercises or if you start getting back into old habits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then I don't know if you guys have had experience with the like when people like come in for like their first like initial session or whatever, and then they like say that like, oh, I've been in the gym, I've been going for a while, and like I only work on like the exercise that like my physical therapist gave me. And this is not knocking like physical therapists at all, but it's like the purpose of their programming is just to get you into like just normal functioning, just to do everyday tasks, but it's not necessarily to kind of like progress you into the area of like kind of like getting a little bit more above that. And I think like if you do want your body to like be more resilient, you have to kind of like progress into that a little bit. And so, yeah. And like, you know, these like light band walks or whatever, it's like, sure, it's like a good form of movement to like kind of reinforce that movement pattern, but it's not going to like, you know, push your body to like become more resilient and become more like resistant to like degradation, like chronic pain and all that stuff. And like one thing that like I guess it kind of like breaks my heart when I hear this is like people like who think like chronic pain is like normal. It's like, oh yeah, it's just like a normal part of like the aging process and like all this other stuff. It's like, sure, yeah, to an extent, but there's so much that you could be doing to like prevent this.
Yeah. And I think another thing, like I have clients who are a little bit older demographic, and a lot of times they have like their physical therapist as well. And so they are giving me a list of exercises that they do with their physical therapist. And I'll say, hey, awesome. Do those like before, as your warm up before your lift. So that way, like you're reinforcing those good habits. And then like you can, it almost helps you think about what you want to be achieving during your lifting as well. So, a lot of them are like, hey, this is awesome because like it always forces to remind me to do my physical therapy exercises as well. So if you do have physical therapy and you do physical therapy, like do those exercises as your warm up before you lift, and that might help you actually continue to enforce those good habits that your physical therapist is trying to help you with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Andy looks like he's tired.
Yeah, he's checked out already.
he's like, it's been an hour. I'm counting down 59 minutes to the exact minute. All
right. I have a clock where an introvert clock. When it gets to 50 minutes, I'm just like
smoked. Yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna have guests on the podcast, man, and big time guests on this podcast. So you better drink more coffee. You better take your nootropics, and you better bring that extroverted energy that we all have inside of us. Because I could go all day, baby. I could go all day.
Yeah, I know you could, mate.
I got another podcast coming up after this at 1 o'clock, and then I just did a solo podcast before this. So this is like Wednesday's like my podcast day. So let's fucking go podcasting all day.
Bloody hell, mate! You are on fire, mate.
I love it. I love podcasts.
Yeah,
I
don't know, podcasts are great. This has been awesome, actually.
This has been super fun. I love this podcast. This is probably my favorite thing to do, content wise, each week. And I think this podcast is just going to keep growing and growing and growing because we've been so fucking consistent with it. Like, how many weeks has it been? I don't even know. We got to be up there with like, with the amount of episodes we have recorded, pre-recorded, and all of that, we've got to be up to 12 weeks, I'd say. Something like that.
Yeah, something around there. Yeah, like, yeah, we have a few up, but like, we have so many like backloaded still that like, yeah, we've got a solid amount of content. Yeah. And we're not going to stop anytime soon.
No. And Andy, you've got your trip to the homeland pretty soon, right?
Yeah, for queen and country.
I was gonna say,
nice, yeah, man.
I'll be going to stay in the west wing of Buckingham Palace with Nanny Lizzie. Well, yeah, I'm going in what, like two weeks or something.
That's exciting, man.
Yeah, man. Can't wait just to go and lay in my mum and dad's house and be fed loads of food. You know what I'm saying?
Did you let all your like old buddies know that you're coming into town?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think some of them.
They'll know. They'll know pretty soon. The word will gather amongst.
They'll know when I get back here and they didn't see me.
Oh, that's cold-blooded, dude.
Mm-hmm. No. I'll let them know probably. But yeah, like the thing is, like car rental has skyrocketed. Like the price for renting a car has skyrocketed. It's crazy. And we don't think we're going to be able to rent a car while we're there. Because we're there for 4 weeks. So, or not, certainly not for the entire time. So, of course, we can, like, Uber places, but, like, I live in a pretty rural area, and so it's going to be a pretty... Mm. I'm just going to be stuck at home unless my mum and dad can give me a lift somewhere.
Well, I mean, tell them to come through. Tell, like, your buddies to come out and hang out.
Yeah.
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 They will. They will. They'll come see you. Like,
come on, mum and dad. You know, the old petrol prices are high.
And then Austin, you're going to Florida here soon. When's that coming up?
Yeah, I'm leaving, let's see, Monday evening. That's my flight.
Oh, damn. That's coming up quick.
Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be overnight flight. And what are you doing, Andy?
I'm scratching my ear. Mate, can I just say, like, the East Coast is where it's at, mate. All the fitness influencers be hanging out on the East Coast.
Oh yeah, I agree. The East Coast is a lot more lit, if you will. And then West Coast is a lot more like laid back. But also one of the things I've noticed is like the West Coast is a little bit more like progressive, not even just in terms of like politics, but like in terms of just like the infrastructure and everything, because everything kind of started out in the East Coast and like expanded westward. So like I've heard like traffic is way better on the West Coast. I mean, I don't know about California, but like, I think in general, like things are just kind of like more like modernized in a sense.
Yeah. New York traffic is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I grew up in the Los Angeles area, so I know that traffic is brutal. What's fucked up about LA is just to travel like 9 miles. Like you're in the car for over an hour.
It's crazy, stupid. It's,
well, during certain times. Honestly, if you hit the highway like late at night, you're good. Like you will not run into much traffic at all. But certain hours, man, you're just stuck. But that's why having an online business is fucking sweet, because you can, you know, if you have a good online business that's thriving, you can live in, you know, a really cool area near the beach and not have to commute into the city all day, every day. So, you know, that's the goal eventually, is to be able to live somewhere warm with a beach and I don't have to be in fucking traffic. That's like, if I can accomplish that, I'll be a fucking happy man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. All right, cool. Well, we'll wrap it up, and we'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening to the Gentleman's Roundtable Body Recomposition.
See you next week, you filth.
Catch y'all later.
Ta-ta.